This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hi, everybody. Cheryl from Unleashed. And today I have a repeat special guest, Dr. Dawn Filos, who's a veterinarian. Hi, Dawn. Welcome back.
Hi. I'm so happy to be back. Hello, everyone.
And if you don't remember, it's Tales from a Pet Vet, Stories from the Clinic and House Calls.
Yeah, it's Tales of the Pet Vet, but you'll still find me. And my name, it's spelled F-I-L-O-S, which is always, people always misspell it, but
why? Pronounce it.
Filos, it's fine. That's why everybody calls me Dr. Dawn, because it's impossible.
And today I want to talk about a few things. I have a list.
Okay.
I know you want to talk about what you've been doing at the shelter, which I really want to hear. But let's talk about vaccines that our dogs must have, as opposed to the 1 year and the 3 year. What do you think? Distemper, rabies, 3 years is okay for a young, healthy dog?
Yeah. So basically, you know, and a lot of people don't understand it. There's different types of vaccines and different newly developed vaccines. So once they get past puppy hood and kittenhood, for we'll talk about both, you know, as a young adult, you boost the vaccine a year after because of the way immunity works. But then the far majority of the core vaccines are 3 year vaccines. And so core vaccines are distemper, which is really the distemper vaccine, is a combination of parvo, distemper, and two other diseases. And they are what are that type of vaccine. So that type of vaccine is an attenuated live vaccine. And that type of immunity, they tweak the viruses enough that it's more of a strong response, but not so much that they get sick. And that immunity tends to last longer. And we say 3 years, and that's every 3 years. The rabies vaccine, even though it's killed, that's also, you know, every 3 years, truly, with cats. But it gets a little more complicated with cats because, and I'll tell you that in a minute. But so the core vaccines are the distemper combination, which includes parvo, which is back, by the way, with a vengeance in a lot of parts of the country, rabies vaccine, and leptospirosis. And leptospirosis is a disease that we used to sort of recommend that be given only in a region for high-risk pets, but there is no region now. It's sort of not just potentially fatal to pets, mainly dogs, but to clients, to owners and veterinarians. It's so that has become, since 2024, that's recommended as core. That vaccine, it's a different type of vaccine. The immunity doesn't last quite as long, and that is once a year. And then there's other ones like kennel cough, Bordetella. So, you know, people think of Bordetella, and there's other vaccines that are, they used to call them non-essential, but they're not core, but they can be essential and life-threatening, you know, if that you need to give them, even if they're not the core. So kennel cough, for example, if you have a dog that travels a lot or travels for dog shows or goes to daycare or boards or kennel, stays at a kennel, or they really need that. And that tends, there's different forms. And there's some others like influenza, and there's a rattlesnake vaccine, which my dog actually got. And that's, of course, that's regional, that's lifestyle. So if you have a dog that hikes like I do, we give that here in Arizona. And those ones are once a year based on the type of immunity. The situation, the most interesting and important situation about cats, I'll mention briefly, is the rabies vaccine. A lot of people are concerned because there are a very small percentage of cats that used to develop a sarcoma cancer at the injection site. So they developed a different type of vaccine. It had to do combination of a specific, whatever it is with certain cats, the way their inflammatory response to vaccines. And it turns out it was the adjuvant, sort of like the solution that the active ingredients in combined put them at risk for that. So they developed these other vaccines that are called PureVax that do not cause it. And now they have another Pure that's were once a year and costs a little more. And now they have a PureVax that lasts 3 years, which is three times the price. But because they're safer, we always recommend them. But, you know, shelter met like these people that go to outdoor cats, you know, and they trap them and vaccinate them. And that's really hard to do. Sometimes it's just cost ineffective. Like people don't want to pay the money or it's for that type of medicine. So depending on the type of vaccine, a lot of the core ones are every 3 years. And then some of the others that are not core, but as needed, are about once a year. And it really depends on the individual dog or cat's lifestyle and risk factors that tell us what to do.
Well, you know, sometimes when you go to different vets, they give a group of shots for X amount of dollars.
Right.
And to do that, they don't include the 3 year, they include the 1 year. And a lot of us have gotten our dogs from shelters, so we don't know what the titers might be. Like you said, with being puppies or kittens, you can schedule it, just like with a baby. I got Tilly at 11 months old, so nobody knows what she had before, probably nothing. And they just gave her the rabies because in some areas, because we're building so much and encroaching on, you know, land that was never used before, wild animals are coming closer to us. So definitely rabies you have to have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely legally, rabies is really the only legally, you know, that you have to require it separate from what we consider core. And I'll tell you, and another thing, because you talk about titers, which is a really important thing, there are certain patients, like if we've had a patient that had a terrible reaction to a vaccine, is the benefit worth the risk? You know, no one wants to deal with that. So sometimes titers are an option to determine if they've been exposed or vaccinated before. Shelter medicine and rescues, they usually err on the side of caution. And it ends up being cheaper, you know, because titers are expensive with rabies and to give it. And then moving forward. But, and so I've meant for decades, you know, we do titers to see like, oh, the titer says your dog's still protected. So I would do titers instead of repeating vaccines, or for people that just would rather do the titer regardless of whether or not they had a serious reaction to a prior vaccine, which can happen in certain vaccines. It happens more often. But the only very, very important thing in rabies is in every state, and different states vary, but titers, if you have a bite wound, if you have a pet that's been bit by a wild animal or an unknown animal, the only way to test for rabies if they're vaccinated, that's great. But if they're overdue or have never been vaccinated, a titer, or you don't know if the pet's been vaccinated, a titer is legally, even if the titer says they're probably okay in terms of the levels are protective, it doesn't count, which is super frustrating for various reasons. The only way to test for rabies is you would quarantine and really be careful and not be exposed to the dog or cat. But if there's any symptoms, they have to test after they're dead. They have to do a test on the brain. There's no way to test if a pet has been bitten by a rabid animal while they're alive. So it's no joke. And it'd be great to say, oh, we'll do a titer and you're probably fine. But legally, it's not allowed. So that's why it's a frustrating, really difficult.
Once you start to see a symptom, you're already dead.
Right. It's 100%. You can't cure it. So with people, let's say somebody, there's a story in my book. My friend's daughter got bit by a rabid raccoon in the morning. You know, she was on her porch and they did not even know that this could happen. And so it turned out to be rabid. So then what she did is went to the doctor and they gave prophylactic treatments. It's, and that's life saving. But if you don't know and you don't do that, or if your pet is already showing the symptoms, exactly, like immediately you have to act. You can't wait, because the symptoms can take up to 6 months to show. But if they're showing, it's 100% fatal. So
starts to water or fear of water or.
Yeah, and they talk about that. But a lot of what we see with that's more like a human symptom, which we hope to never see. Although parts of the world, I mean, it's a huge problem still. And in the U.S., it's extremely rare. But there, you know, I get these graphics from New Jersey and Pennsylvania and notifications in New York. You know, we'll see them. And we have these trends where there was just a rabid cat diagnosed in my neighborhood in East Hampton 2 weeks ago on next door. Everybody's talking about it. So they have to then trap the cat and euthanize the cat and send the brain off for testing, which is gross, but they proved it. So, you know, these stray animals that are walking around, it happens, and seems to be happening more. Like the counts kind of go up and down. I get the graphics for the states that I was a USDA licensed doctor, so we get all that information sent to us, and it's real. And people, you know, we're not making up the risk, and you don't want to, like the fact that my friend, I'm a good friend with a vet, she didn't realize that her daughter needed. She didn't know, you know, so it's important to educate people of the risks, not just to the pets, but to people.
Okay, so everybody who's listening, beware of rabies. If you think it, act. That's the most important thing. And as far as the kennel cough, twice a year, because we go to the dog park, and they say if you go to a dog park, and we're talking a lot of dogs, you know, they share, I bring my own water, but you're not going to tell another dog, don't drink my dog's water. So they all slobber on all of us. So is the kennel cough something that you would get twice a year?
So interesting, because those recommendations change. So here's what the rules are, and then I'll tell you what I do when I practice. So there's different formats of it. There's an intranasal, so it's like a liquid that they squirt in the nose. There's the injection, and then there's even an oral. The protection varies. I happen to think that I used to see breaks in the vaccines, either the intranasal or the under the skin, subcutaneous, around 10 months. So some dogs, they say do it once a year. A lot of kennels, and you really got to talk to your daycare and kennel and see what your vet's recommending, because they might have rules, dog parks don't tend to, where they're like, we want it every 6 months. Because even though that is recommended once a year, individual states and environments and air or wherever you know, daycare or groomers, may have different recommendations. Personally, I used to, because my dog needed to be groomed, I used to give it to her twice a year.
Because we have a lot of dogs that come to the park. And quite frankly, you know, we were talking the other day because somebody brought in a dog. I mean, talk about people. This woman went to a shelter to adopt a dog. On her way into the shelter, this young couple said, do you want my dog? We brought the dog to put it down because we can't care for it. Okay. She says, okay, I'll take the dog. And she walks away with the dog. She didn't even let them go in, intake. She knows nothing about the dog. So we're looking at this dog, and the dog has testicles. I said, no way this dog came from a shelter. They don't let you out with your parts. And then the guy said his sister got the dog on the doorstep. So now they got to fix the dog. They got to do everything because they know nothing about the dog. And I said to him, you got to get this dog all the shots because you can't bring this dog here if we don't know anything about him. A young dog. I mean, less than
yeah.
a year. Absolutely
yeah.
stunning. And you know, one of the guys at the dog park say, we don't know what each other does. There's no rules. You know, we don't like sign anything or show anything. So you're right. Unless we do it responsibly, because we love our animals. Nobody really knows what somebody's doing.
Right. You have to. I mean, there are a very few, you know, like in the state of Pennsylvania, they have certain dog parks, but you have to be registered. You have to have proof of vaccines. It varies from place to place, but generally it's not your dog. It's your responsibility to protect your dog because you can't control the behavior or the vaccination status of other animals. It's always like you could be the best driver in the world. It doesn't matter if there's bad drivers out there around you. And the situation, one of the many problems or the situation with dog parks is just that. But the other thing to keep in mind, because you mentioned drinking the water, it is any environment, it's an aerosol respiratory. It's, you know, from breathing it in, you get exposed breathing it in. But
it could be in the air.
Exactly. It could be. You're more likely, like if you're in indoor, you know, like a veterinary hospital or in a kennel or in a groomer. But the other thing, why I gave my dog twice a year because of what I know and because I would have a mobile groomer or I would take her to groomers because it was, they don't usually require it, but they should. It's a confined space where lots of dogs are coming and going. And those intranasal in particular, I think, are extra effective. They don't hurt. You don't have vaccine reaction. There's very, very rare. So that's one of those risks that I err much more on the side of caution. And for the most part, that is what I personally did, regardless of the rules, regardless of the immune status. Because, you know, if you give a vaccine to a sick animal, their immune system is not, you don't have a guarantee that the immune system is going to bulk up that patient to be protected for a year. You know, they're already sick. So just because you give a shot, you also have to give it with thoughts that I'm not going to give it to a sick animal. I want to give it to a healthy animal so that it's not, you're not just checking it off on paper, so that it does what it's supposed to do. Because with all these recommendations based on studies that the vaccine manufacturers do to say this one lasts this long, it's an average. Sometimes it's longer, sometimes it's shorter. They have to pick a safe average. And there's a very small percent that, very, very small, that it doesn't protect. But I think you increase that percent when you're just giving it just to give it, when they're not healthy. And so, but in general, they're far, far safer. I highly, in vaccines, and it ends up being cheaper. There was just an article I was going to share on my social media. There's a lot of outbreaks of parvo because of misinformation. And there's cases of it that, you know, you can end up spending up to $10,000 treating, hopefully successfully, a case of parvo. And misinformation, you know, this is a lot. That's why I'm so happy to talk to people like you, because it's complicated. Vaccines are complicated. There's all different types. But when you're hearing,
I just call my vaccines myself. It's complicated.
It's so complicated. I know. It's not an easy, so it's an easy subject for there to be, oh, they're just trying to make money or they're over vaccinating. And then, you know, all people have a very polarizing, strong opinions. And so you really should get your information from your vet or people that understand it. And if you don't understand it, then make them take the time so that you make an educated decision as opposed to misinformation, because it can be deadly. It can be expensive. It's no joke. Parvo, you know, I graduated a vet school in 1992, and this distemper vaccine, which people get confused, behavior is fine. It's not about his temperament. It's a virus that I used to see. I remember the first summer I graduated, stray dogs, I saw probably 15 cases of an epidemic, which is usually fatal, of distemper. People don't even, young vets are like, you never see distemper anymore until lately because of this misinformation. And it's so frustrating because we have these vaccines that work, that save lives. And so this constant battle really questioned the source of the information, pet owners. We all want to do the right thing for our pets. And it's just very frustrating as a veterinarian to see these cases when they're preventable, but people are, for whatever reason, deciding not to vaccinate, not based on a reaction, just based on misinformation.
So I want to take a quick break. And then when we come back, I want to go over a couple of more things. We'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back with Dr. Dawn. Now, canine adenovi, is that Kava? Kava?
Canine adenovirus. It's one of the five, four or five better. There's distemper, adenovirus, parvovirus, and parainfluenza are usually in that combination. And then sometimes they add another, like a corona. So sometimes there's an extra.
What's the viral for the gastro?
You mean the parvovirus?
DBV, is that the call letters for it?
DHLPP, yeah.
Okay.
DHLPP or DAPP, kind of. And then sometimes there's an additional C is what it is, actually.
Have they come up with a vaccine for Lyme disease?
Yes. So there are a few vaccines for Lyme disease, and there used to be the original vaccine probably 25 years ago. There were more reactions to it, and it wasn't quite as good. There are newer ones that are better, but not to get complicated, but the type of vaccine killed, the way they make the vaccines for Lyme and for leptospirosis, they have a little increased chance of reactions to it. But I do still think they are worth it. And if I have a patient that has a mild reaction, or sometimes I'll have them pre-treat with something like a Benadryl if they've had it in the past, or sometimes we need stronger meds. But I mean, you know, coming from my perspective, you know, when you have the leptospirosis can be, if a dog gets lepto and in the urine handling, we see veterinarians and veterinary nurses and staff dying of lepto that they caught from patients. You have to be from body fluids in the urine, which this family is at risk. So I don't mess around with lepto. Highly recommend giving that.
I have in parentheses next to it, water from drinking water.
Yeah. So from water, so pets can get it from water that's contaminated from wild animals or other dogs that get it in, so body fluid, so like urine. So let's say there's water and it's, you know, or it rained and an animal, it can wash off and then they can lick it off the patio. It's surprisingly contagious in that regard. And so that is why lepto is now a core vaccine, because it used to be that they recommended it. Do you have a pet that hunts or goes out in the woods or where they have access to wildlife? But as we all know, raccoons and other animals are coming right outside our suburban and sit, they're out there and they carry it. They can carry it. And before they die, they urinate, you know, sandboxes, different things where it's, and then pets will lick it. They can get it. They can pass it on mainly through their urine. So, and then Lyme, you know, Lyme disease, well, it's a whole other conversation, but there is nothing worse than
Lyme.
Well, and it's debilitating, but it also can be deadly. And there's a Lyme nephritis, we call it, which is kidney failure. And there's certain breeds a little more prone to that. And it's horrific. No one wants to ever treat it. No one wants to see it. So that in areas where there are deer at risk, you know, or where you can get it from, which is almost like the whole country at this point, you know, so some are super high risk, more than others. And I lived in Pennsylvania, Bucks County, which no joke, like bucks or deer, we would see so many cases exposed to it. And so, you know, depending upon where you live, your vet will, you know, everything is catered. You outweigh the risk has to be outweighed by the benefit, but each patient has a different lifestyle. You know, if you have dogs, my mom lives in Florida, her dogs don't leave the building, you know, they never go out. They don't need a Lyme vaccine. You know, other dogs that are, spend a lot of time outside in a high risk area, they do. So each patient's different.
We go to the dog park every day and there's lots of dogs. One more question. Heartworm tested once a year or twice a year?
You know, that's a good question because
here in Florida, they're pushing twice a year.
They're pushing twice. I think it really does vary with the state and the incidence. If your pet is on medication all year,
carrier or whatever,
preventative, exactly, then, and there's different, then I say it's fine once a year. And I get a lot of resistance for that. I think a lot of people, what they used to do was only treat, you know, for like half of the year or six, when mosquitoes are out. But newsflash, global weather changes, humidity, there is no season. And depending, some patients travel back and forth. I think but Florida is a high risk place because of mosquitoes. So, and it ends up being cheaper and less putting your pet through, instead of testing before you, if you, you know, I just say give it all year and test once a year from the majority of my patients and their lifestyles and where they live. Instead of stopping it and then testing and then restarting, you know, if you have a lapse in that. But those changes, sometimes those recommendations change based.
And then they give you only medication for 6 months. See, that's how they do it.
Is this in Florida?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there's a huge amount of variation state to state with that.
The terrible. We've had a few dogs that, you know, they were adopted and they're fine now, but they ended up spending months in a cage because, you know, if our listeners don't realize it, it's like having spaghetti wrapped around your heart, squeezing, right?
It's disgusting. It's not even wrapped around it. And when I share pictures on social media, people are like, that's so gross, but it's like spaghetti in the heart. And lots of it. It's like the size of it. So cats, even one. So it's a very challenging, as you mentioned, they're in a cage because the way that you, if you suddenly kill off these large, disgusting worms, they can die and go into the lungs and be fatal. So they can't have a lot of exercise, the medication. It's a big deal to treat heartworm disease. It's far best avoided. But you know, a lot, because so many people, and it's wonderful to see how many in the last years, how many dogs are getting adopted. There's more no-kill shelters, but so many friends and family have adopted heartworm positive dogs and gone through this treatment. And it's a big, big deal. I have a friend, her daughter lives in Denver, and her dog that she adopted, they don't want him to fly because of, get him too excited, drive back and forth because of this dog, which took like 2 years to finally completely get him in the clear. It's and so of course it's a reality because you adopt these dogs, and we're seeing more of that, but it is far, far easier to prevent it. And so nobody wants to have to treat a heartworm dog either.
I have a couple of friends who do not use the medication. They use homeopathic. And they've been very lucky when the dogs get tested, they do not have, you know, heartworm. But I've read articles that it's a lot easier to be proactive than to make it better. Because like you say, it's expensive, it's heartbreaking, and I don't want to take a chance. So I use the tablet once a month on the first of the month. You know, Tilly eats it. She thinks it's a treat and I could sleep at night.
Exactly. Yeah. You said it right. They're lucky. You said it right. And you also are correct. Better to be proactive than reactive.
Yeah. I mean, there are things that you could do homeopathic. I'm all for that, but not when it comes to your heart. I wouldn't do that for me.
Agreed. Agreed. I mean, yeah, there are things that people do, but it's a bit of Russian roulette with your pet's health, in my opinion.
I don't do it with my health. I'm not doing it. No, I'm in for the long haul with Tilly.
Well, I'm glad. I agree 100%. But all of these things, and it's not just, it gets more confusing when you're getting different messages from different states. And so some of the regulations are different, and that can be very frustrating for pet parents. I 100% get it and agree, which is why we're having this kind of conversation, which is why, you know, it's important to educate about all of these things and make sure that you're giving a message and then that your client understands the message, which is important.
So I want to talk, you started to work at a shelter. Why don't you tell us about that?
So as a matter of fact, it's just starting to happen. And so, you know, I've worked in homeless shelters. I've volunteered before, but my neighbor is involved with here in Phoenix. It's the St. Vincent de Paul is a Catholic charity that they happen to have the biggest campus in the country. It's enormous. They feed 7,000 meals a day, which is incredible. And they have this fabulous facility. They have, you know, dentist, human medicine, clinic care amongst the other things that they offer. But they built a veterinary hospital and boarding facility for families that come who are homeless or home endangered, and they are reluctant to go to a shelter or an abusive home situation, for example, because if they have a pet, because they're going to be separated from their pets. And this is a way to stay with the pet.
Commercials all the time. I think it's Purina is pushing that they will help support women in danger, children in danger, and their pets, and put them in a safe place. So they're on board with that now too.
It's a fabulous, because I just did an event for the Arizona Animal Welfare League, where I met all these different services where they'll temporarily foster dogs, but there's not enough of them to go around, and people may not be aware of it or know. You know, when you're in crisis, it's like, you know, time is of the essence. I think, so my goal, I feel like the greatest thing would be for all homeless shelters across the country to fundraise, to have this type of availability for the pets to board. And so what I'll be doing, I'm touring because it's new. And so I'll be doing appointments. And like we talked about with education, and as they're expanding for surgery and all of these things, vaccination, because, you know, you're homeless, you can't feed your family, you're going to vaccinate your pet, you know. So obviously these services are free, but they're also long appointments as we are getting this clinic up and running to educate. And to me, it's the greatest thing. Well, which is why I started my own house call practice too, because you have to make sure your clients understand, and taking the time to educate, sometimes you just don't have that in a busy clinic. So it mimics that. So you have time to treat the whole animal, but really educate the family, answer other questions, all for free. And so I'm really, really excited that it is finally up and running, because it's a beautiful facility. And I'd seen it when it was under construction for about a year and a half ago, but apparently it's done. And I'm really happy to be able to work and help them. I think it's just an amazing concept. And as a veterinarian, you know, I saw this movie at a film festival. It's called Omaha. It'll be in little theaters, but it was about this safe haven in the state of Nebraska for families that needed help, or they would abandon their children because they couldn't afford them to their lifestyle. And so it talked about that, but they, from the perspective, they had a dog, not to spoil the movie, and they had to give away the dog to a shelter because the father It was a heartbreaking scene. And as veterinarians with these home endangered families, you see it. That's the first stage. Like, I've been in that situation so many times, or families that are living in hotels and they're bringing their pets in. That's the first thing that goes. That's the first thing that they let go of when they're at risk of losing their homes. And that scene just really, so we see that. So to see a facility like this, to be able to offer that the family, while they're getting on their feet with meals and a home provided, that their pet is there, they know they're not going to lose that pet. And it's an amazing thing, because it's heartbreaking to see these families.
Just some pictures and a link. So if our listeners, when I post it, if they want to, get involved, maybe in their area.
I will send it to you. As a matter of fact, my neighbor, Marion Ore, she's helped raise all this money. She's involved in it. I'm going there tomorrow, and then Thursday we have a big breakfast. And she sent two interviews. They're local TV, so they're included. And I can forward them to you, where she was interviewed about the program, which she helped get started. It's called CAP, Companion Animal Program at St. Vincent de Paul. I'll send you that information so you have it to share.
Well, I'm telling you, it was wonderful. You know, you're going to come back more than once and twice, because you're easy to talk to. And I can understand what you're saying.
I love talking to you guys. You are, you're great. I would love to come back. You know that.
So I want to thank Dr. Dawn for being here. And hopefully she'll come back and we'll have more good things to talk about. But all you dog owners out there who are listening, really, when your vet says it's time for, because that's the one beautiful thing about vets, they do not go away, and they send you emails, time for. And that's what we have to pay attention to, because when you go to the groomer, when you board your dog, or it goes to doggy daycare, they all want to know what vaccines your dog has. And that I like, I like that. I don't want my dog to be around dogs that could get her sick, because...
Yep, it's a red flag. If they're not concerned about vaccines, then you need to find it. Then you should be concerned, because that means they're bringing in anybody and everybody and whatever it is that they're carrying. So you're right. I 100% agree with you.
All right. So I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I want to thank Mark. I want to thank Tilly for making me a dog owner again. Live Life Unleashed. Bye, everybody. See you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.